2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah help.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for, the sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Alrighty, sports fans, welcome on in. It is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. I'm Scott Mitchell, and of course my co-host, Alex Keery, is lost. I can't find him! He's gone! Actually, he's in Puerto Rico? Oh, I shouldn't say that. He's trying to get a suntan. He's really white. And I'm calling it pasty white. He'll come back red. That's my prediction. Anyways, he's gone. I'm going solo. And I could tell you about going solo. I'm solo for the first segment here. I do have a co-host today, Scotty G from Hands and Scotty, which preceded us, but they aren't in the building. I'm in the building. They're off somewhere. Maybe he's getting a suntan too. I don't know. Anyway, he's going to join me in a few minutes. But for this first segment of the show, I'm actually going solo. And oh, you know what that means. If you have been under a rock, if you've been hidden somewhere, Utah, that's right, the University of Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. They're going to the Rose Bowl, and that is our cut.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, so this is a history-making moment for Unrivaled. It is the first time that I have gone solo on the show. And to be quite frank, I'm actually kind of excited about this. You know, it's like the kid in Home Alone when he realizes he's by himself and he just takes over the house. I don't have to listen to Alex. I don't have to respond to Alex. I get to say everything. And nobody can stop me. There's nothing anybody can do. Except if you're not interested, turn off the radio, but don't turn off the radio because, man, it's going to be good. Okay. When I was a kid, like, I loved football. I mean, it was just, I dreamed about it. I played it every day at recess. I would sit in my house and throw a football up in the air when it was snowy outside. I'd go outside in the winter when there was snow on the ground and there was nothing else to do. And we had this lilac bush in our yard, and I'd try to kick a football over the lilac bush into my neighbor's yard. I mean, anything, any moment, anything I could possibly do, it was about football. I grew up in a small town in Utah, like here in the state of Utah. And the state of Utah back then was not what it is today. And it's amazing. Like, it really is amazing the transformation that's happened here in the great state of Utah in so many areas. And one of those is football. So I graduate from high school, and I go to the University of Utah from a small town in Utah. And I haven't, you know, I played in a state championship, and there probably were maybe 5,000 people in the stands. The first road game at the University of Utah in 1986, we play the Ohio State University, the Buckeyes. When you grow up a long time ago when I did, college football and the exposure was on the three networks basically. And there was always Big Ten football. I mean, there was always Big Ten football. And so I show up in Columbus, Ohio, just wet behind the ears, first time traveling to see big time college football, and we had a walkthrough the day before the game. And I'm redshirting, so I don't play in this game, which thank goodness I didn't, because we lost 64-6. And we were blown out before the game ever started. I just remember standing on the sidelines. Well, first of all, the walkthrough we had, we're on the turf on the field, and it's that 10 with the big, and if you grew up early, you know what that's college football. Ohio State, the horseshoe, Woody Hayes, Ohio State. It's college football, right? So here we are. We're at Buckeye Stadium in a walkthrough. Our running back coach, Wayne McQuivy, comes up to me and he says, "Can you believe that you're here?" And I couldn't. Like, it was beyond me. It was so fascinating to me that how we'd lost way before the game started. Like, we weren't even going to compete. Like, we were going to get just annihilated, and we did. And I remember the next day when we're playing, and I'm not playing, I'm on the sidelines, and my jaw's like dropped. I've never seen so many people in my entire life. 89,000 people. That was the actual attendance. 89,000 people. And they are hostile, and they do not care about you. And it was the absolute most intimidating thing I'd ever been through. I mean, it was just insane. It was crazy. And I think about where Utah football is today. And the fact that Utah now is playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. I don't know if I've told you that yet, but that's what's going on. And I remember back at that time at the University of Utah, 35, 36 years ago, where there wasn't even a snowball's chance that Utah would ever go to a Rose Bowl or ever play and compete against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Now, it was interesting to see how my life changed and how the University of Utah's life changed. I remember watching the players for Ohio State. A guy named Chris Spielman, who was a middle linebacker, he was on a Wheaties box when he was in college. I mean, he was college football. And Chris ended up being one of my teammates with the Detroit Lions. And you want to talk about a weird individual. The dude was wired differently. And just the most intense individual I've ever met in my life. We actually were injured one year together, and we had to have pregame preparations, I guess, in the training room. I don't know what you want to call them. But I would sit in there. We were both getting things done to our body so we could play. And he had torn the pec muscle off of his entire body. And it was just balled up in his chest, and there was this big cavity, and it'd fill up with fluid during the week. And so he'd practice, and then they'd drain all the fluid out before a game. And it was just insane what this guy went through to play. And just, I mean, he's football, right? And Ohio State is football. And I'm seeing all of these guys for the first time. I was so starstruck. I was so out of my element. And I just said, there's no chance that we can win. But later in my life, like, and I had this epiphany, and I found out like how much your mind plays into what happens and how well you perform. And it was in that experience where I just felt so outclassed, and I didn't even play in the game. Right. But I just remember that we didn't think we could win. We didn't act like we could win. We didn't prepare to win. We had no shot. Like like I said, we had lost before we got there. And I remember in my life just saying, because football was my life. I mean, I was just determined. Like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to figure this out, and I'm going to make it happen. And fortunately, I was drafted, and I was able to play 12 years in the NFL, and I had a really good career, and it was an amazing experience. But so much of it was because I learned to overcome like how I thought, and I expanded like my expectation, and I expanded my belief, like, you know, I can do this, and we can do this. And so here is Utah, and it's been fun to watch that evolution, and really watch Coach Whittingham, watch the program, watch the university grow up and become a program that can compete on a national stage. And I think a lot of that came here with the guy who eventually coached at Ohio State, and that's Urban Meyer. And I really believe Urban Meyer set a different standard, a different expectation, a different reality for this Utah football program. And I believe Kyle Whittingham, whether he wants to admit it or not, I think he learned a lot from Urban in that regard, and that has helped propel. Now, I'm not saying it's because of Urban Meyer, but in some ways it is. And Urban Meyer, I mean, Urban Meyer said Utah is a different program. We got to think different. We got to act different. We got to play different. We got to prepare different. Utah has a middle-of-the-road recruiting class in the Pac-12. I mean, Oregon has a nationally ranked – they're like 6, 12, 10 in the whole entire country in recruiting classes. They have Phil Knight. They have Nike. They have and they have a different mindset. Not anymore. I mean, what I watched over the last 13 days, and really this whole entire season, was watching this football program grow up and this university – really grow up. And it's funny because you have all these people who are, you know, they're Utah fans or BYU fans or Utah State fans. And everyone wants to claim they're the best, right? Well, we're the best because we beat you and, you know, and good luck in the Rose Bowl. And do you know how silly that sounds? And I'm not knocking on BYU because I think BYU had a phenomenal year. I think BYU has done something very similar. I think Kalani has done something very similar where he's taken BYU, an independent, and quite frankly, in the world of college athletics, there's only one independent. It's Notre Dame. All right? Everyone else who's independent, they're swimming for their life. And BYU has been, I mean, they've been treading water. And they've been outcast. They've been banished from Power 5 football because they haven't been in a Power 5 conference, regardless of how good the conference or how bad it is. And that's a hard road to travel. But the university, the athletic department, Kalani Sitake has grown up as well. And this BYU has figured out a way. They've figured out a way to be relevant. And to say, you know what, we're not going to accept this. We're not going to accept being mediocre. And what BYU has done this year, quite frankly, I think it's better than last year because they didn't play anyone a year ago. This year going 10-2, 10 wins with seven Power 5 schools on your schedule is exceptional with all the challenges that BYU has in recruiting and all the challenges it has as an independent. Remarkable. Because before the season started, when these players were recruited years ago, no one said, hey, BYU, you're going to be in the Big 12 conference. That's something that just happened this year. That's something that BYU won't reap the benefits of for, you know, 3 or 4 years and maybe further because of kids going on missions. So it's not the school. It's not that, you know, Utah doesn't deserve to be in the Rose Bowl or it's a weak opponent or it's, you know, BYU is getting disrespected for the year. It's so fascinating to me because I've been there and I understand how powerful your mind is to your success and what kind of influence your brain has on how well you do. And it's just fun to see this happen in sports. And it happens everywhere. I mean, you have the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz have never won an NBA title. And it's like there's this mindset of, well, we can't do that. We're a mid-market team, and I just say that's BS. And I say as soon as someone decides we're not going to accept this reality anymore, we're not going to say this is okay to just be average, to just compete. We're going to win championships. And this is what I really love about sports, quite frankly. It's not about sports to me. It's never been about sports to me. It's always been about what I find out about myself through sports. And you don't have to be in sports. I mean, people listening to the show, listening because it's sports, right? And some people don't because they think Alex and I are funny. And let's face it, I'm funnier than Alex. And he thinks he's funnier than me. And that's what's great. And we make fun of each other. And that's part of our show. But so it could be any avenue. You're a part of something. You commit to something. And it's tough. Utah has been to 3 Pac-12 championship games in the last 4 years. And they looked like garbage in the 2 previous. They looked like they didn't believe that they could do it. They looked like they didn't believe that they really were worthy or prepared to play in the Rose Bowl. And I don't know what happened this year. I really don't. I don't know what happened from the standpoint of was it these tragic deaths that happened? Was it the deaths that actually galvanized this team? Did they wake everyone up? Because it does happen. Like death is the thing in life that really gets our attention and helps us to understand what's really important. And I've experienced it personally in my life, and I've been close to people, and I've seen the impact that it has. And in a lot of cases, it does. I've seen it in my own family when my dad died, and it brought me and my sisters to a different relationship than we had before. And we realized that being really close was really important. And it changed that dynamic. So can that do it? Yeah. I mean, it can change your mind. And you look at this Utah team, and what's different? Like, are the players different? I mean, other than Cam Rising, they're not. And Cam Rising has had an incredible impact on this football team. But you look at his mindset and how he plays, and it carries on to people. And then other people start buying into things. And I can say this about Utah State, and I can say this about BYU, and I can say this about all of these football programs about how, it was a person coming in or a circumstance or whatever it was that galvanized a team to just say, we're not going to accept what people perceive us to be. We're not going to say, yeah, you're right, we can't do this. We're going to buy into the doubters, the naysayers. Why even try? Because we have no shot. 1986, it's like, I'm telling you, we walked into that stadium and we had lost already. You might as well just have put the score up before the game ever started, because we knew we had no shot. And why did we know that? Like life isn't predetermined. And that's another great thing about sports and what we love about it. We love to watch the drama unfold, the amazing story, the overcoming triumph, the triumph over tragedy. And that's what this theme of this Pac-12 championship and watching Utah triumph over tragedy. And the tragedy is whether it's the death of players or just the tragic inability to think bigger, to be more, to have a greater expectation, to try hard. So many people, they don't even try in life. They just give up, or they don't try because they're afraid they might fail. Now, I say all of this, which I've said a lot, but I say all of this because Ohio State does not respect the University of Utah. They don't care. And you should be mad about it. You should be furious about it. Because this, they are attacking who we are. They are attacking what we stand for. They're attacking everything that we've been through. As a state, as a football program, as everything. And they've said, well, let me read this to you. I love the Rose Bowl. This is from an Ohio State fan message board. These are Ohio State people. And they said, I love the Rose Bowl, but I hate that tradition robs Ohio State of a better bowl game opponent. Ohio State versus Oregon, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Clemson. But we're stuck with Utah. Utah's good. Man, it could be a good game. But the opponent and matchup is still underwhelming. Now, this makes like the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I'm furious. I'm pissed off. And you should be too. And this game, this Rose Bowl, is a time to stand up. And I'm asking you, I'm on this air right now, and I'm asking you that we take nothing from these Buckeyes, not a thing. And we go out there as a fan base, as a football team, as a university, as a state, and we make a statement. And we let them know that they are playing the University of Utah. And they better put their chin strap on, they better buckle it up, and they better come ready to play. There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. And you have these opportunities in your life, and you have a chance to make a statement and to stand up. And what you're standing up for is yourself. You're standing up to say, I'm going to overcome me. Because that's what this is all about. It's about us overcoming our fears, our doubts, our insecurities, our lack of belief. And when you stand up to the bully, and I was so excited, by the way, that Utah got to play Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. Because you don't want anybody else. You want the Buckeyes. And I love that it's an opportunity to stand up to yourself and face your fear and face your doubts and overcome it. And there's no bigger stage, there's no bigger opponent than what Utah will face in the Rose Bowl. Flat out. Utah's the underdog, just so you know. And quite frankly, this is what Kyle Whittingham loves. He loves this. He loves to be the guy who isn't well thought of. He loves to be the guy who nobody, you know, gives any shot to. This is right where Utah wants to be. Nobody wants to play this opponent. You do not want to mess with the Utes right now. They are the team on fire. And I'm just telling you, people, think big. Think win. Cast your doubts aside and just go Utes. Oh, did I mention, by the way, Utah's playing in the Rose Bowl. I don't know if you've been under a rock, but yes, it did happen. Yes, the world is not coming to an end. And, man, I can't tell you how excited. We're going to take a break. And my partner in crime for the day has arrived. Scotty G is in the building. This is unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. We have got an amazing show. You don't want to miss it. Come right back. We're going to – I guess all these new coaches these coaches have had an amazing year. One of them could be the National Coach of the Year. We're going to talk about it when we come back.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans. All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell and Scotty G. Is it Scotty G? Is it Scott Girard? Is it?
You know, the Scotty G thing's interesting because it's followed me since high school.
Really?
Yeah, and I've never at any point in my life said, hey, you know, you got to call me Scotty G. You know, I'm not like Costanza in with the nickname on Seinfeld.
Like, or like Coach Prime.
Yeah, right? No.
You got to call
me
Coach Prime.
Exactly. Right, but for whatever reason, it's just kind of stuck around. So you can call me whatever you want, Scott Girard, Scotty G, that dude, what's his name, whatever you want.
It's we have the same name.
Right?
But you have a cool name. I'm just like Scott. You know, you're like Scotty G, right?
Yeah.
Now, people have called me Scotty Mitchell. It's the Scotty, I think, is the cool part about it.
And I dig that.
Is that your real name?
No, just Scott.
Just Scott? I mean, is it your first name? Because Scott's not my first
name. Oh, no, it is my first name.
It's your first name?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. See, mine's William.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a long story.
So, but from the start, did they call you Scott, or did that come a little later on?
Well, so when I was born, Scott wasn't on the radar. And first of all, I was the last of four children and the only boy, so they thought I was going to be a girl to begin with. So they didn't really have a name, and so my dad's a William, his dad's a William, and his dad's dad's a William. And then on my mom's side, her dad was a William, her dad's dad, and so like generations, William is a name. So I was named after everybody on both sides. But how do you differentiate, right? So you call them by different names.
There you go. Yeah.
So Scott was the name of the doctor who gave birth to me.
Well, he didn't give birth to you. He delivered you.
Well, yeah.
He wasn't in those stirrups.
No, No, my mom was.
Sorry.
No. Thanks for the clarification, by the way, because a lot of people out there might be confused. Anyways, and so my dad was like, what's up? So anyways, it just was a name out of the blue. And they liked it. They stuck with it. And that's been my name my whole life. And it's been miserable, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, because you go to elementary school.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
And it's like William.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I go by Scott. And so you have to do this all the time. Getting a driver's license, you know, all this stuff. It's like, I've been actually pulled out of a line at an airport because, you know, it's William Scott Mitchell, and I just booked the ticket, Scott.
Yeah.
9/11 changed all that.
Yeah. How about Billy? You ever think about doing that?
Well, see, that's what they call my dad.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I do. I love Billy Mitchell. I think
that's a great name. That, especially for a quarterback. That's got a really great ring to it.
When I was in Detroit, that's what my teammates actually called me Billy. Billy Mitchell. They like that name. And you know what? I think I should change it.
Hey, you know what? Look, there's no time. I mean, like, there's no time limit on stuff like that. Let's go crazy. Let's have some fun. I'll get the imaging guy on the line. We'll switch out the imaging.
I like Scotty
Unrivaled
G.
with Alex Keery and Billy Mitchell.
And Billy Mitchell. Ooh. Why do you have to put Alex's name first?
I think I put your name on first on
just
everything.
Just kidding.
I don't know. Jeremy, you may. Okay, I'm pretty sure I put you.
It doesn't matter. Well, it does, but it doesn't
there
matter.
Was a guy, there was a guy that I used to do radio with that I would – I didn't do the show with him, but I did a lot of the imaging and stuff like that, and I'd type it up, and he's like, so you know, how do you decide whose name goes first? I'm like, I don't know.
It kind of has to sound right, though.
Yeah,
don't you think?
You know, and so just whatever it sounds like. And they're like, well, you know, can we mix it up a little bit? Sure. So I had like half of them that said one name and the half that said the other
but name.
I think pretty sure I had got you on there because, look, you earn the time in the NFL. Your name should come first. That's why Hans comes before me on my show.
See, and Alex doesn't like that. Makes him feel bad.
Well, look, there's a lot of things that go into being an NFL player. First off, the big man upstairs got to bless you with a little bit. Second of all, a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of time. And look, I'm a dude that's got a decent voice and can string a few sentences together. That's what I got going for me. So I'm more than happy to acquiesce to the NFL guy.
You know what's weird about all that? Well, before we get there, I got to say one thing first. It's the fifth annual Black Friday sale going on now at Davis Vision Center, if you guys are interested. Tired of glasses or contacts? Get LASIK now and save $1,400. There are limited spots available, so act now. Check them out at davisvisionmd.com or call 801-253-3080. Today, that's Davis Vision.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off track. I've had LASIK from Davis Vision. Huge fan of those guys. So,
yeah, see, I'm so blind. Yeah. I'm so blind.
Are you really? Do you need to get it done?
I've been blind for years, and I've just functioned blind. It's just I don't know any better.
My friend Robin down there, she'll take care of you.
All right,
let's get it going.
Yeah, in fact, I got contacts and threw three interceptions against the New York Giants. Took him out at halftime.
Really?
Yeah, I said, I'm better blind.
Three picks in the first half?
And we came back and won after I took the contacts out. And so it was enough for me.
Yeah.
But I'm old and retired. Doesn't matter anymore. So we're good to go.
You think you can still sling it? You're the turkey bowl or whatever?
Oh, there came a point. Well, here's what. So I used to play in all the alumni games, which was really fun. And one year I ended up having my meniscus tear and I had to have surgery, and the next year I had my meniscus tear on my other leg, and so in two straight years I had two surgeries from an alumni flag football game.
Yeah, that's not great.
And I just said, I think it's probably time that I just kind of give this up. It's been easier though for me.
Yeah.
Since as I get older, like, it's easier to watch football. Football's hard for me to watch. Like college football is not hard for me to watch. Watching the NFL, I love it, but it's really, really hard to watch because you just think you can play forever. And
yeah.
You still want it because it was so amazing. It really was. And you really feel like, oh, man, I wished I was back there. And for a time, I still felt like, I mean, shoot, Tom Brady, he's 45. I mean, I couldn't have played till I was 45. I could have played till I was 40, though.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was only five. I was 35 when I retired, so it was only, I easily could have played five more years in the right situation.
Yeah.
If I never got tackled, I could play five more years.
Hey, look.
I mean, that's how it is today. They don't tackle the quarterback.
They don't really let you guys get hit much anyway. So
that's how I knew. Like, there were games when I never got hit in the NFL. Like, the game be over and like, wow,
I feel pretty good.
Yeah. I was a backup. I was on the sideline.
All right, so by the way, this is me being selfish here, just because I like to pick the brain, and I've always,
by all means,
you've been in the market forever, and I've always wanted to hang out and do radio with you.
We can do that. We can do whatever you want.
Worst sack you've ever taken, most painful sack.
Oh,
and from who?
All right, so I have one. We were playing Colorado State.
Oh, this is college. NFL.
When I was in college, and I learned from this, like, don't ever step up in the pocket and then whirl around backwards to escape, because you don't know what's back there.
I could see that being a problem.
Escape where you can see.
Yeah.
Right? Don't go where you don't, because you don't have eyes in the back of your head.
Yeah.
And so I turned around to do that, and this dude hit me. And I had a mouthpiece in, and I bit my lip with a mouth, I never have been hit so darn hard in my life. Than that time. Then there was another one. And, you know, the Buffalo Bills played Monday Night Football in a tornado. And I got hit by Bruce Smith. And so I threw an interception. I was playing in Miami. I threw an interception. It was like the only interception I ever threw in my whole entire career. And you're like center field. Like, you stay away from everyone because they all come after you. They try to kill you, right, the defensive linemen. So, again, I was behind everyone, and I turn. The DB runs down the left side of the field, and it looks like he's going to get tackled, and all of a sudden he turns and goes back to right. And I'm like, I'm the only guy left. So I turn, and as soon as I turn to start running, the next thing I know, and I'm not exaggerating this at all, I'm on the ground, flat on my back, and I'm looking up, and there's Bruce Smith. And, like, he hit me so hard, he just knocked me right to the ground.
He's probably got that smile on his face.
Oh, no, he reached down to help me up.
Oh, that was nice.
And he did have the smile on his face. Here's the worst part about it. It bent my face mask so much that my cheek pads did not touch my cheeks anymore. It just crushed it right in and just bent it out. And I went to the sideline and said, Harry, we got to fix this face mask because we got to go back in because they just scored. That one didn't hurt.
No. It just knocked you out.
Oh, man, that was the best one. I remember, you know, I mean, I played the rest of the game, but I did get knocked out of a game before. You want to hear about that
one? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Keep it coming.
Derek Brooks.
All right.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're playing in the first round of the playoffs in Tampa. And I scrambled, and the two times I got hurt in my career was when I scrambled and I dove face first.
That's a problem.
And one was in Philadelphia and one was in Tampa. And all I remember is his helmet hitting me, and I just remember seeing the whites of his eyes. That's what I remember in my head. And I go, wow, there's the, you know, it's like, oh, whites of his eyes. And the next thing I knew, I was in a hospital.
You don't remember
I have
going
no,
to the hospital,
I have
waking
no
up on the field.
Recollection no. about anything other than I looked, I was laying on a gurney, and I looked, and I was in some hospital, like, I don't know, like roomish.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was. And I looked up, and I'm like, wow, it's 11:30 at night. And I was like, man, I'm hungry. So I have no.
So you don't remember the.
I don't remember.
Hospital ride or the.
I don't remember.
Stretch or any of that.
No.
Wow.
I have no. And they said, because my agent was there, and we went to the. He went with me to the hospital. He was actually in the hospital. And I said,
let's lock in.
I go, what happened? And so he's telling me, he goes, you were in the locker room. And he goes, you were crying and you were just upset. And you were just, he says, you were just saying all kinds of crazy things. And I have no memory of any of it. None of it.
So you got up and walked off.
No.
You just don't remember any of it.
Apparently I didn't. They said, apparently they took me off on a stretcher.
Oh, okay.
And have wheeled me off the field.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember any of it. So maybe that was probably the worst hit I got, I guess.
Well, I would say so. Yeah. Now, I mean, if you lost several hours of consciousness, then yeah, that's probably up there.
I did find out later that I had a lot more concussions than I thought.
Have you explored all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the disappointing thing for me. I actually found my brain is normal. And I was hoping that it wouldn't be because I could explain a lot of things.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know what? This is a lot of the problems.
So
I'm
I got a
with.
Normal brain.
All right.
2 full days, like 10 hours of they did all these tests and they did all these examinations.
I hear it's really extensive. You're right.
Yeah. And for the concussion protocol, you know, for the I was required to do it. And they said, yeah, there's really nothing now. Maybe down the road you may have issues, but we've got a pretty normal brain activity, and if that changes, then maybe something happens. But so I really don't have, I have no issues. Okay, so we got to go take a break.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. This is awesome. We can do this all day. I don't care. But I'm going to give you an option.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the next segment, do you want to do what are the odds, or do you want to talk about – because Blake Anderson, Kalani Sitake, and Kyle Whittingham have all been finalists for National Coach of the Year. I thought that could be interesting. We can do it later too. Who do you think is the best coach in the state of Utah?
Okay.
Whichever one of those two.
I want to talk coaches because I think there's two different questions there. Who's the best coach, or who had the best coaching year, or who did the best job this last season?
Because it's
because I could, and I said this on my show with Hans, I could sell any one of these three guys.
Yes.
Like any one of these dudes, I could go out and I could be their campaign manager and I could go out there and lay the best claim for each one of them. And it would be hard to deny it.
I agree. All right, we're going to take a break. It's Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We come back. We're going to talk coaches.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Attention. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All righty, sports fans, welcome back to Unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone. Billy Mitchell here with Scotty G filling in for Alex Keery, who's, he's sunbathing to darken his white pasty body.
Oh, okay.
He'll be back in a little while. Hey, look, it's time for a market update. Try Day Trading, of course, is sponsoring this. Now anyone can be a day trader. Visit trydaytrading.com. The markets are up today. The markets are up all across the world, by the way. The Dow is up 492 points. NASDAQ is up 461. S&P, 95 points. And, of course, Most things are in the green, if you wanted to know. So 10-year yield's up, oil's up, the yen's up, the euro's a little down, gold is up. So things are up right now in a world that's kind of in turmoil.
Yeah, give it a couple hours.
I know it changes. All right, so this is fascinating to me. This is really fascinating to me. You've got BYU, Utah State have all had exceptional years. We had Jeremiah Jensen on last night, and I said, "Have you ever seen this in the state of Utah?" For I'm just talking about football here. I mean, because let's face it, no one really cares about anything else, right?
Yeah,
it moves the needle. Football just moves the needle. Have you ever seen a year that has actually been this successful for all of these programs?
Oh, not even close. And look, I've been doing sports radio here in this market for, 17, 18 years. I've never seen anything back. I've been a fan of sports here in the state of Utah for my entire life, and I nothing even remotely comes close to this.
So all three of these coaches have been are now finalists for the Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year Award. And I think about it, and you go first blush, you go, well, with all that Kyle Whittingham has been through and getting to the Rose Bowl, yeah, the first time, you go, oh, well, yeah. And then you think of Blake Anderson and what he inherited and comes out of nowhere and wins the Mountain West and like doesn't just kind of eke by, but dominant victory over San Diego State. And you go, and San Diego State beat Utah, and you go, well, And then you go, Kalani. I mean, he has a 10-win season. He's undefeated in the Pac-12. He goes 6-1 against Power 5 schools and has a remarkable season. I mean, and you just go, who do you give it to? I mean, who deserves this the most and who's done the best job?
Well, I think,
how do you want to dissect this?
I think it's really a fascinating question because, all right, so I look at it in terms of, like, Brady Hoke, for some reason, was named the Mountain West Conference Coach of the Year.
I saw that, and it's just
ridiculous.
Baffling.
Because he had a lot already there in place, and he just kept it rolling. Now, 11-win season. 11-win seasons aren't easy to come by, but right, had a ton of talent, inherited a lot of talent. And I always look at what have you done based on your level of expectation. And I think all three of these coaches far exceeded expectations, especially when you look at Utah and how they started with back-to-back losses, and then Cam Rising comes in and they make a tough decision there and dealing with horrific tragedies, and to be able to win a Pac-12 championship, that's remarkable. Kalani Sitake lost the number 2 overall pick, an NFL pick, a ton of guys in the NFL. The schedule was 8 times harder than it was last year, and they still win 10 games this year. And then Blake Anderson inherited a mess. And frankly, I know that you have a lot of things that you know about what goes on with the Utah program that you have to keep to yourself. I have things as well with Utah State. I'll just say this. It's worse than what people thought it was. And it looked bad on the outside. Let me tell you, it was worse. And to be able to take over that program and to be able to win 10 games, dominate a Mountain West Conference championship game against a team that had 9 all-conference members on it. You had one, including they had the Coach of the Year. All three of these guys you can lay claim to. Now, again, I'm going to admit I'm a little bit biased because I know a lot of the things that were going on. Like, Blake Anderson's about ready to hop on a plane. He's accepted the job at Utah State. He's about ready to get on a plane to come to Logan for the introductory press conference. And before he leaves, he just found out that there was a mutiny on the team and they had just essentially refused to go to Colorado State to play the final game of the year.
And this is after he's accepted
He's accepted the job. And the athletic director came to him, John Hartwell, and said, "Hey, you still want to do this?" Like, he was honestly like...
So it's like that 3-day grace period, buyer's remorse kind of thing.
When you buy that car and they're like, you have 72 hours if you really want to do this. And he's like, you know what? Let's go. Let's do it. And he came in and said, "Hey, I understand that I'm not the guy you wanted, but I'm going to try to earn your trust, and I think we can do great things here. I still think Utah State's roster, they were smoke and mirrors with their offensive line all year, and to be able to piece that thing together." So Blake's got my vote for this individual year. If you were to come at me and say, it's got to be Kyle Whittingham, I'd be like, well, yeah, you got a good point.
Don't you kind of think, because you're the play-by-play guy, right?
Yeah.
And so you watch you have discussions, you have an intimate understanding and following of the program, because of what you do. And so you know, like every play. Because I remember being on with you guys on your show, and I said, I think this is the best team Kyle Whittingham's had. And I remember you looking at me going, what? Like, what about 2019 and all those NFL guys? But I was like, I could see it. You know, you could see when you're in it every day. Because, like, I'm just going to take your word for what's going on at Utah State. I mean, I haven't followed it as closely, but I do know that it's a remarkable story. I just, you know, you think of other schools in that conference and Boise State and some of these other schools and Fresno, you know, and you just go, you just wouldn't think that it would be year one.
Correct.
You know, even maybe not even year two, or, you know, who knows. So why do you think, I mean, what turned it around?
I just think that there's a certain, and you can speak on this probably better than I can as a player, but there are years where everything just kind of clicks. And I don't know if that's due to coaching. I don't know, but there's this kind of, and you felt it with Utah as the season went on after they got through some horrific things and they figured out the quarterback position and Tavian Thomas stopped fumbling the ball. Like, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this year could be magical.
Yeah.
And it felt that way in Logan where it's like, okay, this shouldn't be happening. These wins these guys are putting together shouldn't be happening. And then that momentum, and then the team starts to feed off it, and then they have the confidence and that swagger like, hey, we just came back and we beat Washington State on the road. We were down 12 to this team and came back and won.
And Washington State ended up being a pretty decent team.
Exactly.
I mean, they weren't a dog at all.
I mean, they're down 12 with essentially 5.5 minutes left. Touchdown, three and out, go down, score a touchdown, win the game. And once that confidence starts to build, it compensates for maybe some deficiencies you may have on the roster. And that's but it all started with the coaching and buying in and having the belief. And, I mean, I don't think I'm going to have a season like this again in a long time.
Timing is everything. Because you take BYU, for example.
Yeah.
They get Arizona at the beginning of the year, right? Who's their – they got better as the year went on. They weren't the worst team in the Pac-12. At the first year, they were, but they weren't at the end. And so they got them at the perfect time. They got Utah at a perfect time. They got USC at the perfect time. You know, they really – there was Arizona State that I thought was a pretty decent team. You know, they had turnover issues against BYU, and that kind of played into, you know, and then BYU turned around, and the one bad loss against Boise, turnovers were what really killed BYU in that game. And so, yeah, there's part of it where you go, great coaching job, really. But then there's another part of it you go, sometimes you just get the right draw, the right luck, you hit teams at the right time. Utah playing Oregon at home. I still think they dominate Oregon, but it's a whole lot harder to go up to Autzen and win. And so, yeah, I think playing into these great years, and I remember when BYU won a national championship in 84, they're going to lose to Hawaii, right? And seeing Kyle Morrell and the timing of that play, which I think is the best defensive play I've ever seen in my entire life, and just how he timed it perfectly – they stop Hawaii from scoring and end up winning the game. And so it's like, yeah, these guys – and they have. These coaches have done a remarkable job. But there's just sometimes where timing and you just get lucky. You just get a little bit lucky.
It's been fun to watch. I mean, again, I say Blake Anderson, but then I know and have gotten to be good friends with Blake Anderson. So I will raise my hand fully and admit that I'm biased in that. I'm sure you could say the same thing for Kyle. BYU fans could say the same thing for Kalani, and everybody could be right in their assessment.
Yeah, I don't know how. I seriously don't know how you give it to one person.
Yeah,
I mean, I really don't, because I totally agree with this that everyone. I mean, it was, and it's not like, wow, they just had a real. It was like so far beyond everyone's expectation.
Yeah,
and so maybe they just split it up. Maybe it's just like it's all schools in the state of Utah get the Coach of the Year award.
Well, let's be honest, too. They'll probably just give it to Nick Saban anyway.
I know.
Like, what's he doing on the list?
I know.
Why is Nick – no, Nick Saban
Well, Alabama was down this year, and they miraculously had this great win against Georgia.
I mean, let's do a 30 for 30 on the 2021, you know, try-hard Alabama Man, they fought so hard and overcame. Shut up. No, they didn't.
It's going to be an epic thing.
Stop it.
It'll win an Emmy.
Yeah.
Dumb. Hey, we're going to take another break. What do we got coming back here? Let me look here. I don't even know. Anyways, we got some really.
Hey,
we're going to talk about what if this year was a 12-team playoff? What would that look like?
I like that.
Do you have something else?
No. I saw the bracket, okay. And I was just looking at Jeremy's notes, too. Do you have memory of the 1986 game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you already bring it up or went on that second?
You were behind a rock. It's okay.
Oh, I like it. All right.
Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We'll be back in just a bit.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
GS! GS!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. Scott Mitchell, Scotty G. It is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Hey, visit the Ford Fan Zone on Level 6, where there are free pop-a-shot games, cornhole, and foosball tables. Enjoy incredible city and mountain views while relaxing, enjoying food and drink. Take in the game and socializing with, of course, your friends. Scotty G, of course, is here. He's a formidable replacement for old Alex Keery, who's on vacation.
I'm just riding those coattails, man. Yeah. I'm just crack a mic, and I'll just try not to screw things up for you guys.
No. I was really excited. I really appreciate you coming and helping out today. And as you have mentioned, you know, we've never worked together before, and so thank you, and really, I'm excited to do this. I'm excited about what's going on here at the Zone and what we're doing, and it's fun to be a part of it. And I know you're a big part of everything, so I just appreciate you helping out.
Well, no, it's an honor to be here, and like I said, I've always been a big fan of yours and what you've done, both as a player and as a coach and as a media guy as well. And so it's really cool to hang out and kind of pick your brain a little bit. And I apologize.
Pick away.
Because I was on the phone coming in here. I was actually talking to Lloyd about some other stuff we're working on. And I did not hear you go down memory lane on 1986.
Well, we can go again if you want.
Well, no, apparently it did not go well. The one time Utah played Ohio State.
Well, you know, it's kind of that out of the ashes of disaster come the roses of success kind of thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that was definitely a disaster. Well, first of all, it's just really cool, right? Because when you grow up in a small town and you grow up in a very, Utah wasn't a big state or what, football. There was kind of BYU football at the time, but going to the Ohio State University and going to the Horseshoe and watch so many games on television, and how they had the 10 and the big, the big tent, and that was the logo that was there. And you're like, man, this is it. This is big time college football. And it was an overwhelming feeling because you always question yourself. You go, I don't know that I can do that. I mean, and you're there for the first time. It's really hard. I mean, when I got drafted and I met – I didn't meet Coach Shula before I got drafted by the Miami Dolphins, and he intimidated the heck out of me.
I would imagine.
And then Dan Marino was like – he was my teammate, but he was like right next to me in the locker room, and I'm just like I don't know that – I may have said two words to him probably the first year I was there. I mean, I was just like – because he was so good, know? And there was this presence about him that was just bigger than life, and so it's just funny when you get in those situations where you meet your heroes or all of a sudden you're among them.
Yeah, you're one of them.
And I learned really quick though that like if you don't perform, if you have no relevance, you're not here. So you have to figure out how do I make the team? How do I become relevant? How can I contribute? Otherwise, hit the road, Jack.
You're out.
So it was a good wake up call.
Yeah, I gotta imagine that resonates pretty quick. And I know that game got away from Utah, but I think from your perspective, stepping in as a member of this University of Utah football team and You were a redshirt freshman, right? So 1986 was your first year.
My very first year, yeah.
And then, so that's 86, so that's four, that's what, 35 years ago?
Yes.
To now playing Ohio State in a Rose Bowl as a Pac-12 champion, is a member of the upper echelon of all of college football. I mean, that's not a lot. That's pretty damn cool. Like, just to show the trajectory of where Utah was and where they're at now, less than four decades later, is pretty remarkable.
One thing I learned about myself is I'm super competitive. Like, it's just a thing. I don't know what it is. I don't, maybe it's my personality makeup. I don't know. Coming to the University of Utah at the time when BYU was the power, and not going to BYU, which was a big deal when I didn't go.
Did BYU
there.
Want you? Did they?
So, yeah.
Oh, we don't need to go down that road.
No. Well, what?
Well, I just didn't know if it was a sore subject or not, or if it was.
No. It's a sore subject. I didn't go there. Oh. So I'm related to Lavelle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I went to all the games.
Yeah.
In fact, Gifford Nielsen was a family friend of ours, and he would take me to football camps at Utah State University in the summers when he was in the pros. And I was his roommate. So I had these, you know, really close connections to BYU, and I was a really good baseball player. Gary Poland's the coach at BYU. Yeah. At the time. So I was going to go to Utah and play or BYU and play football and baseball. Lavelle came into my house December 1st, 1985. You're our number one recruit. So it was a foredrawn conclusion I was going to go to BYU. And yeah. I didn't go. And I didn't go because I prayed about it. It really happened that way.
Yeah, that's all good.
But when I went there, we were terrible. Like, we weren't very good. And that was hard for me. And it was hard because I really felt that the school, the surrounding, it was like, this can be big-time college football. I really believed it at the time. And so I left never going to a bowl game, never winning a conference championship, barely being above 500. I set all these passing records just because we were terrible.
You did get that win against BYU, though.
Yes, and that was the sweet moment of the time. And it was, I think it was one of those things where, wait a second, you know, maybe there's hope here. Of course.
You had a premonition about this, apparently. Well, it wasn't a premonition. I wore my good luck Kingo hat all week long. I was sitting in the locker room before the game started, and I was looking down on the floor, and there was a penny right there, and I just said, find a penny, pick it up all day long, you have good luck. I picked it up, put it in my sock, wore it all game.
Is it in there now? Let's see. There it is, folks.
So that's me, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Do I sound like that?
The voice is dropped considerably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's how it was recorded. You're a little bit more like alto there. Now you're a good solid bass. Yeah.
It has to be how it was recorded. And that was Dave Fox. So Dave
Fox. That was Dave?
That was Dave Fox.
I didn't know that was Dave Fox.
That was Dave Fox interviewing me. And anyway, so yeah, that was a big deal. But to see it, to be here when it was pathetic.
Yeah.
At Utah, and to see all of that, to see how it changed, and because you care about it. You know, it's part of who you are. My experience at Utah was invaluable. Playing on the field, off the field, was just a remarkable time in my life, and I cherish it and I value it. And to see where it is today, and to see and that when Utah got to the Pac-12, that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, you can now go to the Rose Bowl. Like before, it was like, you're a bowl buster and you might get on a New Year's 6 game, the Sugar Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, but you're never going to go to the Rose Bowl. And now you can. And I was just like, man, this is just, it's so awesome. And that competitive side of me was just like, yeah, get there. Come on, let's go. Yeah. You know, kind of thing. And then to actually go to the Pac-12 championship and witness it and see it happen, I can't get over it. I'm not kidding. When this happened on Saturday, I was on cloud nine, and I just keep running it through my head. Like, Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. And to be able to, in a small way, you know, call and be the color analyst on the radio, which is super fun for me to do. And I'm not affiliated with, you know, I mean, to a small degree I am, but – I'm not there coaching. I'm not there playing. I'm an alumni. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
But to be a part of it in a small way, I'll take my crumble.
Well, I do think, and I'm the same way. I know what it's like because, you know, everybody, you know, afterwards, like, hey, you guys got a good win. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I just called the game on the radio. I had nothing to do with it. But it's fun to be because everybody always asks, and I don't know if you if you've noticed this as well, but after like a big win and you come home and the next day, like, oh, I bet that plane ride was a lot of fun. Well, here's the thing. People don't know. 99.9. In fact, up until last weekend, 100% of all the charter flights I'd been on with a team were exactly the same.
Right.
Dudes are dead tired.
Yep.
They're worn out. They don't say hardly a word at all. And they're usually, because I don't know how Utah does it, but they usually put the guys on the plane first and then the boosters and the media and we come in at late.
Right.
And then they take off. And so you walk by these guys, they're all dead to the world. They're tired. Yeah. They're worn out. They're beat. You don't hear anything. And so I always said, you know what? It's boring. Like, there's nothing going on. Win, lose, it's always the same on a flight. Up until that last flight I had coming back with Utah State after they won the Mountain West Conference Championship game.
That was different.
That was different. That was loud. That was obnoxious. That was fun to really see. And because those guys were just in total celebration mode.
Yeah.
And I got to imagine the same was, I don't know if you're on the charter or not, but I got to imagine that was the same kind of thing.
Well, Utah State. They actually traveled home the next day. They actually, so I can only imagine whatever happened in Las Vegas.
Oh, they didn't fly out that night.
Stayed in Las Vegas.
There you go.
We were on our post game for 2.5 hours. I mean, we were just soaking in every possible moment, grabbed some dinner, and then I was, you know, I was out. My experience has been just what you've said. You have these, like, these big games and you're just so dialed into it and you're on such a high and physiologically what happens is all of the chemicals start draining out of your body, you know, and so you just come down off of what happened. But you're like, oh, we're going to celebrate all night. This is going to be the most incredible thing. I know guys that have won Super Bowls have, you know, Steve Young even said that. He's just like, I just thought I was going to sell. And he says, I just tired. And I just went back to my hotel and, you know, kind of went to bed and that's typically what happens. And I think, I'm not sure, why, and maybe it's just the way athletes are wired, but there's just this, okay, it's over. You have your moment. And now it's like, you're on to the next season. You know, it's like, I don't know that you ever really can fully appreciate or embrace or just value and cherish what you did. And I think it maybe is after it's all over, you look back and you go, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But in the moment, you're just like, next game, next season, regardless of the outcome.
It's probably, it makes sense.
It's my rationale.
Yeah.
For not winning a Super Bowl, that's what I'm just like, it's just, you know, having a moment.
But to see there's, because, you know, I was doing the media here thing in 2010 when Utah announced they were going to the Pac-12. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is crazy. They might win, you know, they might go to a Rose Bowl someday.
Yeah.
And then you realize, okay, well, here's the thing. Arizona has never been to a Rose Bowl.
Never. And they've been in the conference
since the early to mid 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, you go and you look at how hard it is to get to this level and how hard it is to get to that point. And you can say, okay, well, the Pac-12 is down. Well, sure. Okay, maybe. You can say that, I guess. But it's still going through a high-level, high-competition conference, and to be able to put your stamp on it, dump truck a team twice in 3 weeks that at one point was in the college football playoff top four, and to do it in such a resounding fashion, I mean, is just remarkable. Like, we always knew since this team was in the Pac-12, this day could come, but now that it actually is here is really remarkable. Same thing with BYU into the Big 12. Like, you've heard the Big 12 rumors forever. And I know it's not the same Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma, but now that they're actually in it, it's like, holy smokes, this is great. You know, and so this is kind of the salad days of sports here in the state of Utah. I really, truly believe it.
I've always said this, living outside the state of Utah and living in places like Michigan and having big-time programs and big-time sports, and you go to Florida and live in Florida, and it's in the heyday of the University of Miami and Florida State and Florida, and you just go – you know, here you're in a state of Utah, and you can have two programs that are in Power Five schools, and I know people were upset, BYU fans, this and that, and you know, whatever about everything, but you're in the national conversation. You know, they're having Selection Tuesday or you know, Selection Sunday or whenever they're every week talking about the rankings, and you have BYU in the discussion, you have Utah in the discussion, and you think about moving forward, and you think about the rivalry game and whenever it resumes, and it should resume, it should always be there.
You're pro rivalry.
Oh
game.
My goodness, yes,
good.
Yeah, absolutely,
good.
Yeah, because yeah, it's college football, but it just. And if you have both these programs that are on even footing, it makes it even better because losing it and the what's at risk from losing it when those stakes go up, I just love that. And BYU being kind of in Netherland and in independence was a terrible thing, and I've always believed it. And I'll just tell you about Cincinnati. You know, Cincinnati is in a conference, not a great conference, and they're now in the college football playoffs. And I just think being and having that conference affiliation has more cachet than just being out in kind of outer darkness. But the BYU is now in a Power Five school, and Utah is. The discussion every year, it's like now you're in the dance. Now, you know, whatever it is, like you said, and it just brings a national audience here to the state of Utah, and it raises everybody's level of play. It raises everybody's expectation, and you have these two universities that are within 45 miles of each other. You have over 100,000 people on a Saturday watching college football in these stadiums if they're full, because they're always sold out.
Yeah.
You know, whether everyone shows up or not, it's a different thing. And that's when football just becomes just so exciting. Imagine a Utah team that's ranked in the top 10 and 15 or whatever, and you've got a BYU team, and they're having a rivalry game, and they're two ranked teams playing each other, and they're Power Five schools. It starts to take on a significance more meaningful, like when USC plays Notre Dame. And that's a big game to those schools, and that can become an even bigger game, a more meaningful game for people in the state of Utah. But it also can maybe get pushed more on a national stage because there's so much more that can be behind the winner and loser of the game.
I mean, I just how much fun it was just having Utah and Utah State play on those back-to-back days for their conference championship games. I mean, just imagine the day that BYU's in a Big 12 and they're playing in a Big 12 championship, and we have three games going on like that over the weekend. And I know the chances of that are pretty slim to none, but it could happen. And if that were to happen, I mean, I think we just take a step back. I know we talked about the coaches and the three different years that they've had and the kind of success that we've seen here in the state of Utah. But, I mean, this is a really fun time for college football. And frankly, and I know we'll get to Kalani Sitake and some of the rumors regarding him coming up, but if they can lock down Kalani, I don't know how much Kyle wants to go. You know, Patrick Kinahan's been pretty strong in saying that he doesn't think he's going to be – he doesn't think he's shutting it down after this year. But I don't think Kyle's got a ton of years left in him because I'm sure he wants to enjoy retirement. I hope Blake Anderson stays in Logan as long as he possibly can, and I understand the financial situation there where you may need to broaden your horizons a little bit. But if we can lock in coaches and see him here for a long time, my goodness, there's no reason why any one of these three programs should go back.
Well, that's what I want to ask you is, like, you got a guy in Kalani who I believe wants to be at BYU.
Yeah.
And he's the right person for it to stay long term. And I think you have Kyle at Utah where a lot of the success comes from the continuity of things. And I don't, you know, I think he'll go beyond this year, but I don't know that he's going to go much beyond.
Yeah.
So my question was, you know, is a guy like Blake Anderson, or is there a way that you could kind of create that environment at Utah State? Because it's not the norm in college football. I mean, these coaches move on, they move places, and typically maybe these jobs in Utah are stepping stones. But I could see Kalani staying, and if it's Morgan Scally that replaces Kyle at Utah, Morgan's probably a guy that would I mean, he's, you know, he played here. He spent his whole entire coaching career here. A little surprised he hasn't moved on, unless, you know, and unless he thinks he's going to be here long term. But, you know, if Scally can keep the program going, I doubt he's a guy that would leave as well. And could you create that scenario at in Logan?
I would like to think so, but it's tough. And especially when I like Matt Wells, a good friend of mine, after doing, you know, the run that he had up at Utah State, and he's an alumni. I mean, he fits, checks all the boxes. Yeah. But let's be honest, Matt Wells made more in his 2.5 years in Lubbock, and he'll get paid out. I mean, he'll end up making 30 some odd million dollars over the course of that, over that contract. Well, it would take him about 30 years to be the head coach at Utah State to make that kind of money. And that's life changing. That's send your kids anywhere they want to go to college money. That's making sure that they're able to get a house when they're adults. And
you can't turn that down.
Yeah, that's a leg up in life that you just can't you can't get if you just stay put. Now, I know $1 million in cash value goes a long, long way. I'd like to give that a shot someday. But
you can get a lot of cheese.
Yeah, a lot of cheese
up in old Cache Valley there with the $30 million. Might be able to buy a dairy farm, maybe.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a break. I don't know where we're going to go.
I would go like
next.
Like a state, you know, like, you know, let's, I want to provide, you know, get a cattle farm that's solely for steaks, man. Just like, you know, get that Wagyu.
You know what? That would be fun.
Yeah.
I could do that. All right, we're going to head to break here. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 Zone. We come back. Mario Cristobal's leaving.
Yes.
And are all these guys going to come back to Utah? The prodigal sons, will they return? And maybe some of these recruits, maybe they'll reconsider. We'll talk about that more when we come back.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back to Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 Zone. Scott Mitchell, also known as Billy Mitchell, and of course, Scotty G, who's filling in for Alex Curie, who's away for a few days and resting, recuperating.
Well-deserved as well.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Hey, guys, Minky Couture wants to help you this holiday season with the perfect gift. Stop by any location from Ogden to St. George today. Mention Zone 50 and save 50%. Look, this is a no-brainer, guys. Get it today, save 50%, and get the best gift ever from Minky Couture. Okay. Scotty G.
Yes, sir.
I asked Mario Cristobal, right? Pac-12 Media Days. Like, you have a target on your back because you guys have established yourself as the best program in the Pac-12. And he had none of it, right? He didn't want to talk to me about it. He didn't want to see anything. And we're broadcasting the game, and I go, something's not right here. This isn't the Oregon team. This isn't the mantra, the culture that, like, this team quit. This team quit the first game. This team's quit again. You talk to some of the players from Utah, and they're like, this was kind of a soft Oregon team. So this isn't – so Mario Cristobal, boom, he's out, right? So here's my question. Is him leaving, does that open the door? And does that change recruiting? Does it change these guys who are you know, local guys here from Utah? And there's like five or six guys. There's five guys in there, and they played high school football here. Great players, and some of them done very well at Oregon. Is there any chance that they come back?
I think there's a high chance. Now, let's be honest here. It could get a lot worse if Kalani Sitake takes the Oregon job. Then the state of Utah's in a whole lot of trouble.
Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, okay. I think you have to. Like, honestly, you owe it to your family. You owe it to your assistants. If a school that has that kind of budget and is offering you that kind of money, you have to at least listen to it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just be like, no, I'm a member of the faith, and BYU wants me here, and I want to be here. Let's go. I mean, no. I mean, you got. I don't care if you're an accountant. I don't care if you're a sports radio host. I don't care if you're a head football coach. You've got to explore those opportunities. You owe it to yourself, and you owe it to your family and those around you to explore it. Now, would Kalani take it? I don't know. I mean, we all have our number, right? Like, Kalani may love BYU, but if they're paying him, just throwing out a round number, they're paying him $2 million, and Phil Knight comes into a room and says, I'm going to give you $7 million. Like, okay, where do I sign? Like, I don't know what that number is, but we all have it, and I don't know what it would be for Kalani. But if he does take it, then all of a sudden the state of Utah is on notice because Kalani's coming, and he's coming for all your recruits, and he's bringing all of them to the Pacific Northwest.
So is Oregon, since we're talking about this, because I want to talk about the players and what that looks like, but is Oregon like USC where – because you're talking about Kalani, and I'm like, is he the name enough? You know, would he be recognizable? Would he be? Is it enough flash? Because Lincoln Riley at USC, personally, I think it was brilliant.
I do too.
By USC. I don't know that there's another coach in college football that they could have handpicked better.
If you can't get Urban, that's your next best hit.
Yeah, there. I mean, it really is. And I think it was smart on Lincoln Riley's part to leave Oklahoma. I mean, because the Pac-12, like, think about it right now. The best team in the Pac-12 is Utah. No offense to Utah, but, like there's nobody else. I mean, there's – I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking Washington State, maybe. I mean, like, who's the closest – I don't know. But is Kalani Sitake sexy enough for Oregon, or does Oregon have to get that sexy pick, because it is Phil Knight, and it is, we have a uniform change at halftime. Like, it's so flashy and so hip and so, and I'm not saying Kalani isn't, but is he that sexy pick? And if not, who is that guy out there that potentially could be the guy?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if that guy really exists for Oregon.
So it's a unicorn.
At least at this point. So yeah, I think your best bet if you're Oregon is, I mean, look at the people that John Wilner, who I think is fairly in the know when it comes to these things. He's listed off Justin Wilcox at Cal.
Right.
Well, that's not sexy.
Right.
Especially seeing what he's done at Cal.
Right.
Chip Kelly, who the shine seems to be off of that. I mean, he's been fine and got things going a little bit at UCLA.
Retread.
But he's a retread. And then also, the rest of college football is caught up to a scheme. So I don't know if he's going to have that kind of impact. Let's see, who else is he thrown out there? Like Kalani Sitake? And then there's nobody out there like, ooh, wow, you got to get that guy.
Kalani was high on the list, or at least the odds in Vegas or wherever.
Second highest.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, if I'm Oregon, Kalani might be, of all that group, Kalani's bringing the biggest flash out of all of them.
All right. So, if you're a player at Oregon.
Yeah.
And because right now they kind of have an interim coach, I guess, through the bowl game. But what would it take for you to leave? I mean, is it? It just feels like all of a sudden the wind just got taken out of Oregon. It really does.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, Kalani would be a great hire. And I actually like Justin Wilcox. I think a lot of what, you know, Cal's a tough place to be. I'm just curious. Would Kalani be a sexy enough pick for these guys to stay?
All right, so as far as the in-state guys go, yeah, absolutely. You know, in terms of your previous question, would in-state guys come back to Utah? I think if Kalani Sitake's there, the answer to that is no. Your other players that are on Oregon that have no clue who BYU or Kalani Sitake is, it might be a question there. But I wouldn't I've heard enough, talked to enough parents that have had Kalani Sitake in their living room recruiting their kids. I don't think it would take long for Kalani to win that locker room over, and I don't think it would take Kalani long to win over potential Oregon recruits. Like, I think he fixes that pretty quick.
I think if you're out looking for a coach, I don't know why you wouldn't want Kalani.
I know.
Personally, because I agree. I think he's done a phenomenal job recruiting at BYU, and with the limitations that are there, I think he's done a phenomenal job of putting together a culture. Because early on it was kind of sketchy and questionable, and he really matured and grew up as a coach and put together a staff and a culture, and I believe a lot of it was how they recruited and how they changed how they recruited that caused this to happen. And so, yeah, I would think that would be fascinating.
Well, I had one person describe Kalani in terms of whatever he needs to do on a recruit, and whatever that kid is dialed in on, he will be dialed in on. So he can go in one night, go see a kid and talk to the kid about the latest Drake album. And then the next kid, he can go down and break down Russell Nilsson's last conference talk. Like, whatever he needs to do, he does it, and he's well-versed in all of it. And he'll be just fine doing it. And so, at this point, if I'm Oregon, frankly, now the question is, would Kalani want it, and would Kalani take it? I can't answer that. But I would say, if I'm Oregon, he's one of the first three dudes I call, and I have a hard time probably when I get him in that room not wanting to offer that job. Now, again, I'm not saying he's gone. I don't know. But it makes too much sense, honestly.
If you're Tom Homo, what would it take? I mean, because he's got to be. Do you think he's nervous? You think, because it feels like Kalani's name keeps getting mentioned at a lot of these places. And does the Big 12? Well, do you think that Tom Homo's nervous? Do they want to lose Kalani?
Well, if I'm Tom Homo, I'm extremely nervous. Now, when Bronco left, I don't think they were too brokenhearted. I think it was probably good for both those guys to go different ways. If I'm Tom right now, I'm extremely nervous. But let me ask you about this, because Hans brought this up on the show today, and I thought it was a really good point. When's the last time you've heard Kyle Whittingham associated with the job floated out there? Maybe USC a little bit when Clay Helton.
About 4 or 5 years ago, that was the only rumbling of any suggestion.
But here's a guy that's safe. He's got a huge track record. He wins games. He graduates kids. Like, Kyle Whittingham checks off every single box. And so I think there's been, anytime there's a major opening, I'm sure Kyle Whittingham or his agent have gotten a phone call, and they immediately say, no, we're happy here.
Yeah.
Or if they do, they say something to Mark Harlan, and he gives them an extension, which it seems like Harlan's first 3 years on the job, Kyle got an extension like every 6 months.
Right.
So it's not that he hasn't been approached. I guarantee Kyle's been approached, but Kyle knows he's got a great thing here, and he's very, very well compensated. He's what, top two or three in the Pac-12 in compensation? So they pay him his market value. BYU right now is not paying, by Big 12 standards, Kalani Sitake market value. And so if you're going to play big boy football and you've wanted forever to get in the Big 12 and you fought and you scratched and you clawed and you've done all this stuff to get in the Big 12 and you're finally there, well, guess what? This is the cost of doing business now. You never in a million years did you ever think you'd be paying a coach $5 million a year. Well, guess what? Pony up. You have to now, because if you want to compete in this conference, that's the cost of doing business. No more of this, well, we're different here and we look at it more of a calling, blah, blah. Right. No, you have to pay the man. And not only do you have to pay the man, but you have to have a assistant coaching pool that is on par. And I think that's what Kalani probably wants as much as anything, is because, number one, he wants to take care of Etu Iyaki and Aaron Roderick and see them get raises. But also, he knows if he can't afford to bring in or retain high-level coordinators, they're not going to win in the Big 12. So this is the cost of membership. And so if you're not willing to do that, then you should send a letter of resignation to the Big 12 and say, sorry, we're not coming because we can't do it. Either you're in or you're out. But if you're in, you got to act like it and you got to pay it.
I think one of the things that I appreciated about Utah was, look, we're not just happy being in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And that we're gonna invest in resources like you're talking about. You talk about the cost of doing business, the facilities and just the upgrade, and they're really second to none, what they've done in the stadium renovations and what they've done with the coaches. There's no question about that. And that does pay off. It pays off big time. So I think that will be an interesting, shift in the whole dynamic at BYU. Are you just happy being there, or are you really serious about being a contender? And I think these universities, I think all of them, it's the ones that really make that investment and see the value in it to do it. Stanford wins if the administration says, we value our program, we want it to win. Notre Dame, the same thing. But when they don't, they suffer. And I hope that BYU will do that. I don't know what will happen, but I hope they do.
Well, and I don't think this is a Tom Homo thing. I think it's way above him. Like, I'm sure if it was up to him, he'd have the budget necessary to go out there and say, all right, Kalani, let's lock you down. Let's get you a 7-8 year contract at, $4.5 million or $5 million per, and let's go and let's do this thing. But it does feel like college football is going in a direction where I mean, Brian Kelly's getting 10 plus million a year. Cristobal's getting 8 something. I mean, yeah. These guys are making 10, 12, 13 million dollars a year, and this is it's an interesting shift, and you hope the rest of the world of college football can keep up, but these are some crazy numbers being thrown out there.
A lot of money in college football.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take another break here. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We come back. We've got Evan Dudley, the University of Alabama, Birmingham beat writer.
Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery with the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All righty, sports fans, welcome back to Unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell, also known, I'm going to be an alias, also known as Billy Mitchell. We decided that today. And Scotty G. from Hans and Scotty, who those guys precede us in so many ways on the zone here. And he's filling in with me. Thank you again, Scotty, for doing that. Alex is out on vacation. We have with us Evan Dudley, the UAB beat writer for Alabama.com. And, of course, our guest is sponsored by SmartRain, state-of-the-art smart irrigation controller help with that first-class water management. Visit smartrain.net to learn how to save 30 to 50% on your commercial property water cost. Evan, welcome to Utah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Have you ever been to Utah?
I have not. I've been as close as Junction City, Colorado.
Oh, yeah. You're just a mountain range away.
Anyways, exactly.
Yes, welcome. And thank you for tuning into our show here. We appreciate it. Of course, BYU is playing UAB in the Independence Bowl. And so tell me, what should we know about UAB?
UAB has I wouldn't say a sordid history, but an interesting history. Their first 20 years or so, they had maybe 3 bowl eligible seasons, 1 bowl appearance against Hawaii. I think that was 2004, 2005. They hired Bill Clark in 2014. He gets them bowl eligible their first season. Then they shut down the program for 2 years. They reinstate it 6 months later after they dismiss it, but they have to wait 2 years to get back to the field. They arrived back in 2017. Since then, they have been bowl eligible every season. They've won 3 straight division titles up until this year, with UTSA winning the West Division of CSA this year. And they have 2 conference titles within those 3 division titles. So, I mean, it's been a kind of a flip-flop since Bill Clark was hired. So, I mean, the UAB hold is no longer. And as we've all said plenty of times, the UAB program kind of had to die for it to live.
Wow. You know, and it was interesting, too, because I think we all remember seeing the video of the announcement that, number one, that it was being shut down, and then a couple of years later when it came back, and the emotions of those student-athletes. But my goodness, it seems like this team has really started to hit their groove. You've won 3 out of the last 4. And a really close loss where UTSA, which certainly is, we've seen what they've been able to do this year, and a game that you guys almost got there. So this is obviously a really quality team. What is it that's really jumped out about this team that's really separated itself that's allowed them to get to that 8-4 mark?
As it is every season since Clark has taken over, it's been defense. It's a very attacking defense, a very aggressive defense. They're going to come at you with their front 7. They're going to put their secondary and cornerbacks on an island, make them play in man coverage. So, they're going to compete against you physically. They're going to try to make you uncomfortable on an offensive end and try to force you into mistakes. Offense, they're going to try to, run the ball, play ball control, hit you with play action passes over the top, once they get that running game running. So it's a really kind of an old school mentality, but one that is still working for them.
Oh, man, I want to talk X's and O's, but I'm just fascinated by shutting down your football program. And I've seen studies, and I believe there was one done at Harvard that talked about a university without a football program is a university without a heart. And can you is there any validity to that with your experience there, or how has it changed since the program was reinstated?
I can sort of agree with that. Myself personally, I'm an Alabama graduate, so obviously without Alabama football, there would be absolutely nothing in Tuscaloosa whatsoever. So on a personal level, I can see that. As someone who's covered UAB, They're in a large city, Birmingham. They were really more of a basketball program for so many years, for about 15 years before they even added football. So it was more of a basketball town. But, you know, with football growing so much, especially the college game growing so much in the past 30 years, you know, it, like you said, it really has become kind of the heart of a community. Now, Birmingham, a much larger community, but also what we've seen with them coming back was that that community responded to that need and really put forth, you know, the support that it needed for it to come back. And since then, you know, they have a new operations complex, you know, practice fields, offices, locker rooms, as well as opening a new brand new stadium this season. So, I mean, it's just a complete turnaround, you know, from what it was. And it has a lot to do with, like you said, that community heartbeat getting behind a football program for a university. But then again, with UAB, if it did not have a football program, it would still have one of the finer medical research schools in the country. So they do have that going as well.
So you've got nearly 1,800 yards between Dwayne McBride and Jermaine Brown Jr., with McBride getting nearly 1,200 yards on the season. He's got 12 touchdowns. Brown's got 7. Obviously, complementary running backs, but what are their styles like? Are they similar? Is there a differencing style between those two?
I'd say they have a little differing styles, but they do have a little similarity. Jermaine may look a little bit smaller than Dwayne, but he's just as physical as Dwayne. He can get in between the tackles. He can kind of squirm his way out there. Kind of reminds me a little bit, maybe a little bit of Emmitt Smith. He can get small in between those tackles and then kind of break out. Dwayne is just, you know, he's a bull in a china shop, really. He'll hit the line. He can break through it, but he can also bounce to the outside, break off long runs. I mean, last year in his true freshman season, he had two of the longest touchdown runs in UAB history. The longest was 75, and I believe he had a 71-yarder as well. Both those plays came with him hitting the line and then bouncing to the outside. So, I mean, he's a guy who can make plays when there's not there. Jermaine, he's a little bit more versatile. He plays in the passing game a lot more. He can split out wide. He's got really good pass catching skills, and he's maybe a little bit more jittery than Dwayne. He can make a little bit more quicker cuts, just being a little bit smaller of a guy. But both those guys are really real physical runners.
What's the challenge that BYU brings to UAB? What are they going to have to overcome to win the game?
They're really going to have to sit down and get that running game really going. Obviously, they have one of the better backs in the country, tied for the nation leading touchdowns. But you also look at one of the other guys tied for nation leading touchdowns, Rasheem Ali from Marshall. UAB shut him down for less than 100 yards with no scores. They did the same to Sincere McCormick, less than 100 yards. I think they allowed him one touchdown. But, you know, this is a really good rush defense. So, I mean, it's kind of strength versus strength with BYU and UAB. But at the same time, if BYU can really establish that run game, then their passing game is going to be really kind of flourish, you know, as well, because that UAB defense is going to really try to be really zeroing in on stopping that run game.
How much of a drive is it to Shreveport, and do you think you'll see some pretty strong UAB contingency down there?
It's probably about an 8-9 hour drive over to Shreveport from Birmingham area, so I'd imagine there'd be a good bit of UAB fans. They also got a big basketball game on campus, at the ACC's new Legacy Arena, right next to Protective Stadium, but against West Virginia that night. So, you know, big game at home for basketball. But I think you'll see a really good contingent of UAB fans make the trip, since it is a very drivable trip.
All right, Evan, any last comments? Anything you feel about the game? Who's going to win it?
Oh, 2 weeks out, it's a little bit tough. I first thought I'd probably have to go with BYU. Obviously, they had a great season. You know, better Pac-12 record than half the Pac-12. They beat the Pac-12 champion, you know, head-to-head. Obviously, these guys deserved a better bowl, but, you know, contracts, ESPN events, you know, they have to do what they must do, and there's not a lot that can be done once that machine starts rolling. So, but I think BYU, probably the better talented, better team, but UAB is also a team that gets the most out of its players. They're going to play physically, and they're going to try to, you know, give themselves a chance there in the second half against a really good team. And you look at what UTSA did, they were also a ranked team, a really strong running team, and they were able to play them all the way down to, you know, pretty much the last play of the game. So I think it'll be a good matchup. If BYU really gets the running game going, I think BYU will be able to run away with it. But I'm hoping just for a really good game that we can all enjoy.
I hear you. It's December 18th at 1:30 Eastern time, I believe. Is that correct? Yeah.
1:30 Mountain.
Is
that 1:30 Mountain?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It changes across this whole country. Anyways, Evan Dudley, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you soon.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, folks, we're going to take another break. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We'll be back in our next hour. We've got Tim Lacombe. We're going to talk a little Jazz and, of course, that NFL roundup. And I'm going to take Scotty G on a ride through the two-minute drill.
Let's go.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back to Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scotty Mitchell, known as, I like Scotty better. I'm just telling you. Scotty Mitchell is here with Scotty G.
All right, there we go.
And we're doing this show today. Of course, I'm a regular on this program, and Scotty G is my invited guest today, and thank you very much for joining us. Alex is out for a couple of days, and we're having a good time here. I've thoroughly enjoyed every single minute of what we've been doing today.
Yeah, this is fun.
I really enjoy it. Look, guys, Minky Couture wants to help you this holiday season with the perfect gift. Stop by any location from Ogden to St. George today, mention Zone 50, and save 50%. Guys, it's a no-brainer. Get in today, save 50%, and get the best gift ever from Minky Couture.
So I've been doing remotes up at Minky Couture. Hans and I have been up there a bunch.
Yeah.
It's the one way you cannot screw up Christmas. Like, I'm telling you, Valentine's Day, Christmas, birthday, anniversary, you bring in a Minky Couture, and you will not screw it up. You will not be in the doghouse. It's the safest gift you could possibly give.
My first grandchild arrived. It's been 4.5 months now.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Yes, thank you. And you know what she got?
Minky blanket.
She got a Minky blanket. So did my daughter. And my daughter lives in Charleston, South Carolina, took it with me on the airplane. Granddad of the year, right there.
There you go.
Yeah. So I get it. I understand. Hey, we're going to have Tim Lacombe here. Jazz insider with us. He's going to join us in a bit, but the all Pac-12 teams came out. I'm curious if you think, were there any surprises for you?
No, honestly. Maybe no, I mean, honestly, I was actually, you look at Cam Rising, named first team quarterback.
Yeah.
And I remember you came in, you're like, at the end of the season, it'll be highly thought of as one of the best quarterbacks. And then I'm thinking, wow, he didn't play the first, 2.5 games. And,
right.
And then I'm realizing, well, who else out there is better?
Right.
And then you look at the, the dude from UCLA with second team, and it's like, well, yeah. Cam Rising's like light years better than that guy.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer, honestly.
Everyone talks about dual-threat quarterbacks. Cam Rising is, I think, the only dual-threat quarterback in the Pac-12. I mean, legitimate, where the guy can legitimately throw the ball and legitimately run the ball. And I think running, to me, has been the massive surprise. I marvel. I watched him in the championship game. It's like, wow, he had that 40-yard run, and it was just a tough run. And he's just a lot faster than I think people give him credit for. But he's running the ball has been massive for Utah. Converting third downs, he's been incredible.
Don't you think Keithy should be on that first team tight end?
Yeah, that was the one that I was surprised by. I was surprised. It's like, wow, because he has just been such a great, great player, both running and blocking on the most, the high scoring team in the Pac-12, the Pac-12 champion. It just felt with me, I know there's a lot of representation, right, on the first and second team, but it just feels like maybe there should be more guys represented. I'm not sure where they fit, who it should be, because there's three guys on the defense overall, and it just feels like maybe there should be more. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Tavian Thomas, I mean, there was a three-game stretch. He had 9 carries over that three-game stretch, and he ends up on the first team as well. It just shows you when he poured it on, it was something special.
See, I think this is a kinder, more gentle Kyle Whittingham, because in years past, Tavion Thomas, with the fumble issues he had early on, would be banished forever. And to Kyle's credit, they stuck with him, and they saw something there, and they were very patient.
Well, I know my guy Timmy's waiting, and in fact, you pot him up. We'll talk to Tim.
Tim can talk football with us a little bit.
Yes. But you know, here's the thing about Kyle Whittingham. At the end of the day, it still comes down to talent. And Tavion Thomas, I know, is putting it on the ground, but you know, you go three stretches where he only has nine carries, you realize our best running back is over on the sideline. We need to fix this. Like, he's got to get out there, because that guy's talent and that his ability is so good that if we put up with him putting it on the ground once or twice, we have to, because he's just that good.
Is Drake London, is he the player of the year? Because he was the player of the year. Offensive player of the year, and he missed, like, most of I think he missed the last month of the season.
Yeah.
Tim, how are you? You can join in the conversation here.
Hey, Coach.
What's up, guys? Man, Scotty and Scotty. How about that?
I know.
Got you covered, man, from every angle.
Yep. Every T is crossed.
So, yes. All right, so let's say you had, I'm trying to think, all right, let's say Jimmer. All right, your final year at BYU, or Jimmer's final year at BYU. And you can tell he's far and away, let's say Kawhi Leonard doesn't exist. Jimmer's far and away the best player in that conference, but he only plays, 75% of the season. Should you still honor the player that played, again, about 75% of the season, and while he was playing was far and away the best offensive player, but didn't go a whole season? Should he still pick up the honors for the offensive player of the year?
I don't think so. I mean, not in the world I grew up in, anyway.
See, I agree with you on this.
I mean, I think talent's talent, and I love talent, you know. But it's what did you actually do in a setting, you know, all year long? Did you make a difference? How'd you help your team? That sort of thing. And hey, like, I understand that injuries or whatever happened, but to me, part of it is, you know, the endurance part of it too.
Well, I'm glad we all agree on this.
Yeah,
it's a unanimous vote here. So if we agree on it, then who should be the offensive player of the year in the Pac-12?
I mean, I look at Tavion Thomas with what, 20 touchdowns?
Tavion Thomas, yeah. Too. I'd say, yeah. He's a beast. That dude. That, like Scotty said, I saw from the very beginning. I'm watching the Weber State. Like, who is that? You know, but he just couldn't hold on to the ball for a bit. And yeah, I think Kyle was wise to bring him back.
Yeah.
That was good. But, yeah, that's who I'd pick.
Well, when you're – like this time of year, this is to the victor go the spoils, right? I mean, that's what – like USC was lucky to want to get through a season. I mean, they were a non-factor in the Pac-12. They really – and so I feel that if you perform well, your team does well, it's because you have good players. You have the better players, and for that, you should get that recognition. And I just didn't feel like – and I'm a – look, if Drake London was a receiver and I was a quarterback, I'd throw the heck out of the ball to him. But
yeah,
to not, you know, finish out the season, he's a great talent, is all these things. I think it diminishes what all these other players have done and what they've meant to their teams. And especially this Utah team that won the conference championship, represents the conference in the Rose Bowl, and it proportionately should be represented on the all-conference team. This is a Utah team that led the conference in scoring and was the very best team, period. End of discussion in the Pac-12, and I agree with you guys. Or, I mean, Cam Rising – I know he's all conference, but still, you could argue for him as a player of the year as well. All right, can we shift gears, or do you have more to comment there? I mean, I want to talk Jazz, but
yeah, shift. I'm good.
All right. So, Coach,
you guys,
I want to go back to Hans and I had a debate, and this was when the Jazz kind of hit their low point in terms of 3-point shooting, and it was struggling, and so I put a number at. The Jazz were playing a good chunk of home games. It was about an 8-game stretch, and I told Hans, over under, the Jazz are going to shoot 35.5% from three over this eight-game stretch. Well, now that eight-game stretch is in the rearview mirror, and in that stretch they shot 43% from three. Do you feel like this team has righted the ship in that regard and that they'll close up? Because now I think they're as a season they're up to about like 35, 36%. Do you think they'll get back into that 39, 40% range before it's all said and done?
I think they're certainly capable of it. And you know, with the addition of Rudy Gay and the way he's shooting the ball, particularly, and some of the matchups he'll be able to get in the positions he's in, I kind of do believe that they'll shoot it as well or better. I never bought, you know, I couldn't figure out why they couldn't make shots early on, but it really was a little bit of an epidemic, and they figured it out. And what's crazy is through that whole time and not making shots, they're still find a way to be the number one team and on offense in the league, and that's just widened now that they're knocking shots down.
It feels like Donovan's kind of getting into his groove now. You know, he's. I'm just curious, what do you see with his game, and where is he right now?
Well, I would tell you this. I told Scott, Jake the other night during the game. We sit right there where you guys are right now and watch the games a lot of time on that television. And I told him, I said, Donovan to me looks like a guy that's having a lot of fun playing right now. He's smiling a lot more. You know, for whatever, you know, I think you know, the being a pro is difficult. I think you go through so many different phases of it, and it's hard to settle in. It's hard to get 13 guys to settle in and want to do the same thing. And but I do feel like right now the Jazz are pulling in the right direction. I think Donovan's a huge part of it. He's kind of made an uptick in his ability to make plays for others. His assist numbers have gone up considerably over the last few games, and you know, I think that's just a byproduct of him understanding that he really kind of is the straw that stirs the drink, and if he can be really good at scoring and distributing, you know, makes it really difficult for the other team. So I've really been impressed with Donovan, and I think he's really on one of those little upticks in his career, even where he maybe was hit a little bit of a plateau to start this year. And I think he's just really kind of hit a new stride, which I really like.
When you're identifying guys in maybe recruiting or as an NBA team in the draft, how hard is it to evaluate clutch and clutch moments, clutch situations, things along those lines? Because to me, that seems like that's something you're born with. You're not necessarily able to develop. I don't know, maybe you can. But Donovan has that. And it seems like some dudes have it, some dudes don't, and you don't really know until those moments. But it seems like he's hitting it out of the park in terms of being able to take over a game in a fourth quarter when it's a close game.
Yeah, you love a guy who, you know, you want his role to be the closer, and he actually performs in that role and does it consistently. That's what you love. To answer your question, I think that's one of the great, debates in recruiting. I think you're out there trying to find the most talented guys you can find, but you also want, and you know, it's why the NBA spends so much time and money on the recon, you know, the background of these guys, because you do want to dig in and how do they handle tough situations? You know, what are they like off the floor? You know, and really you have an opportunity to observe a lot of body language during games and certainly watch what, you know, how successful their teams are. I think you take that all into account. I thought it was really impressive, Coach Rose, when we were working, you know, his kind of deciding factor in the end was he took a guy who he'd take a guy who won a state championship, you know, had a good, great season over somebody that was on a mediocre team. And that's kind of sometimes how he decided, you know, because he felt like that piece was really, really important.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I'm listening and thinking about this, I'd take a guy. I want to see how he responds when he fails. I mean, when you look at Donovan, there were some games earlier in the season where, you know, he's your closer, and he, you know, he kind of failed. I mean, he dribbled the ball off his leg out of bounds. He poor passes. I mean. And you talk about these people that have had success, you know, and they were willing to fail. They're willing to try and fail and then figure it out through that failure. And there are some people that are like, man, I don't want the pressure of losing, or I don't want to go through the agony of defeat. So I'm just going to play it safe, and I don't want to see the ball down the stretch. And it's those players that have failed, or they're not afraid of actually failing, that propels them on to bring it on. You know, I want to be the guy. I want to be the one with the ball at the end of the game. And I think a lot of it's just how they learned how to deal with failure.
No, I totally agree. I think, you know, it's the only way to know success is to have tasted failure and to know the difference. Or, you know, so that's, yeah, and to watch how guys deal with that, you know, it really is important. So kind of an X factor, I guess, in recruiting, and X factor in finding guys. But I'll tell you what, Donovan Mitchell's made of the right stuff. I mean, I see it again last week. Dude's got a couple nights off, and I know what that means now, because I do all these nights, and it gets really long. And you get a night off, and you just want to, you know, hang out on the couch. And what does Donovan do on a night off? He drives all the way down to Utah County to see a group of kids that he took an interest in because they came to practice or came to a game. It's stuff like that, man, that you, again, just shows the fabric of what kind of guy he is.
Mike Conley shooting 47% from 47% from three. Shot nearly a career high last year, 41%. I mean, look, this guy's 33, 34 years old and shooting career highs in three-point shooting. This system can be good for a lot of people, can it not?
Man, it really can. And I feel bad because Mike is – it's almost like it's expected, you know. And
yeah.
It's a perfect example of what Scott's talking about. You go back to his first year here, and, I mean, a number of people that would have sold him down, you know, to the highest bidder – you know, the next team in line, they would have done that here. And, you know, the bottom line is he played through it, and he's playing as good as he's ever played, I think. And he just has this calming influence on the team. They really respond to him. You know, I think it's interesting. Quinn talked about Ricky Rubio when he was here in town last week, and how, you know, Ricky's greatest quality is that he innately thinks of others. And I feel Mike's the same. I think Mike is a guy who constantly is out there trying to figure out how to put guys in a better position. You know, and yeah, to your point, Scotty, you start talking about Joe Ingles, and you talk about his ability and strength, and you talk about Bojan, and you talk about, you know, a guy like Rudy Gay, who's high, high level, and Hassan Whiteside, who's bought in. You really can see that this team has the ability from a character standpoint, from a talent standpoint, and I do believe this year from a little bit more versatility, you know, being able to match up to a team like the Clippers if they decide to go small. I think that stuff's really, really important.
I think Mike Conley said you either evolve or you die, you know, and it's like the three-point shot is the NBA, and so – you know, figuring out how to make that shot. Really quick here. Go ahead, Scotty.
No. I've got a dumb question. Yours is more important than mine.
My question is, the Jazz are they've played the first of four road games. How do you get a mindset for a road game or a road trip in the NBA? What do you look for, and what do you focus on as a coach to get your team ready to make that stretch?
I think I heard the guys talking about, you know, after the game, I think the message was sent that, hey, we're going out here, you know, it's holidays and there's a lot going on, but we're going to go out here on this road trip, and it's going to be a business trip, and we're going to do it from the start. And they had a crazy tough contest in Cleveland, who's, man, they're impressive to me. I really like their team. I think that we're going to hear way more about those guys, and the nucleus of that team, you know, going forward is going to be pretty good. But I think that it's really a mindset. I think, you know, you can go out there and try to wade through it, or you can plow through it. And I think the mindset of this team for this trip, you know, is set pretty squarely by Coach Snyder. They're going to go out and try to plow through this road trip. I like it because they had to really fight to win the other night, and they play a really good upstart Minnesota team tomorrow night on the road, who's a top 10 defensive team as well. That's got the ability to play the Jazz, you know, really get up in them, which is hard. They can be really switchy, which gives the Jazz trouble, and they're great out in the open floor. So it's going to be one the Jazz got to be locked in to win. And, but I like their mindset. I like the way that they talked about it after the first game.
All right, Jazz Insider Tim Lacombe, thank you, bud. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Always.
See you, Coach.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium Grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
What is that?
And the other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. Unrivaled Scotty Mitchell and Scotty G, who Scotty G is filling in for Alex K. We're not using last names anymore.
I like it.
Yeah. Anyways, he's, of course, the better half of the Hans and Scotty show. Hans?
Hans.
Hans.
Rhymes with Lance, like Lance. Hans. Yeah.
I thought it was Hans. Rhymes with hands. Hans is Hans. Hans.
There you
Almost
go.
Like ants, but Hans.
There you go. That
I'll
works.
I'll do it that way. Hans and Scotty. Anyways, they precede us on the zone here, and Scotty was kind enough to join me as Alex is on vacation. The NFL Roundup, of course, is brought to you by LHM Used Car Supermarket. Over 1,000 used vehicles in inventory. Shop online at LHMUsedCars.com. It's time. We always do this every night. We do it year-round, no matter what's going on. If it's in season, out of season, we have a roundup about the NFL because the NFL is always in business. So are you ready for it?
I am ready.
All right, let's do it.
I do have one for you near the end. I really want to get your thoughts on one topic last night that really jumped out at me.
Well, we can start with it if you want. I mean,
how miserable would you have been being a quarterback and attempting three passes in an entire game?
It depends on the result of those three passes.
You do get a win.
I will tell you. Oh, yeah.
But you have nothing to do with it outside of taking a snap and handing off.
Yeah, that's a free day right there, if you ask me.
You're stealing money at that point.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I only had to throw this thing three times and we won. I'll take that all day. So everyone talks about weather, you know, like it's part of football and it's football weather. And I had Tom Hackett on last night and he was just like, I hate that saying. I hate that you know, how, like, it's football weather. It's like, no, it's like miserable and uncomfortable. And I think for the most part, I mean, there are times when it really, like rain is awful. Like, snow is actually pretty easy. It's not as bad because it's just the moisture and it just drenches you. But a cold wind or a you know, a 20-mile-an-hour with gust to 50-mile-an-hour wind – I mean, that's a summer day in Buffalo most of the time, but those are brutal conditions because you cannot throw the ball. I mean, you just can't. And so it impacts whatever you do. And if you're a throwing team, you know, you're kind of screwed.
I mean, I guess you did go to the NFC North where you had to play in Green Bay and Chicago a couple times. But most of the time, you know, look, you're in Miami for a good chunk of your career, and then you go to Detroit, which is indoors, which was, that's smart business planning right there.
It was – well, you think it is on the outside. The Silver Dome was pressurized, so it was they forced the air, which kept the ceiling ballooned, and whatever the temperature was outside is what it was inside. So
are you serious?
Oh yeah, it's freezing cold in the Silver Dome.
Oh, did you know that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, like, and we would practice when the weather got bad. So you were in winter gear going to practice in the Silver Dome. It was brutal. Yeah.
I had no temperature control in those things.
Well, they had it. The only time they used it was if there was snow on the roof.
Oh, okay.
Because the roof actually collapsed because there was too much snow on it at one point. So they would melt off the snow. Now during game day they didn't control it either. What they found out was, so it's 80,000 people, right? So it was a massive.
It's a lot of body heat in there.
The body heat just kept it warm, So instead of having it like at 32 degrees, they maybe bumped it up to about 50, and then the fans took care of from 50 to 70. And that, now in the summer, some of the hottest games I've ever been in my life have been in the Sweatbox Silverdome.
Holy smokes. I thought you were like just nice, calm, 70 degrees. whether it's January or whether it's August.
It was a great advantage to play there, but it was a terrible place.
Well, then you're playing on essentially concrete on that turf too. So
and it was asphalt, and it was about 2.5 inches of foam. Yeah, brutal conditions. Now there were some cool events they brought into the Silver Dome. So the World Cup in 1994. When it was played in America, they played games in Detroit, and they brought in grass. And they said, we could do this all season long. So they brought it in pallets, and then they connected the pallets together, and they created this. And we actually played multiple preseason games on grass, which was phenomenal. If we could have done that, you know, then I'd say, yeah, I'll play here forever. And I believe that had an impact on me, like – my back and things later on, just being on that every single day was actually quite brutal.
Oh, I think the AstroTurf is one of the worst decisions in the history of football.
Yeah, yeah. And they thought it was smart. Yeah. Now, here's one for you. Miami actually was very windy.
Yes.
So you would get a pretty stiff breeze, believe it or not. And actually, it was a lot windier than people thought.
Wouldn't have thought that, honestly.
The gamesmanship with Miami is making teams wear their dark colored jerseys to our home game. So we were always in white on a home game,
especially in like September when it's scorching hot down there.
You had to declare before the beginning of the season like who was home and away, what jerseys you wore, and I think they did it through the first 9 games of the season. So 9 weeks into the season, then they went back to the – because you wanted to be warm, you know, late in the year. Then it had the reverse impact when you go to Buffalo or New York. The Dolphins, we were freezing cold when we went up there. But weather without a question, massively impacts games.
Did you – and I should know this. Did you sign as a free agent in Detroit, or did they trade you?
No. So what happened was I became the second year of free agency.
Okay.
So Reggie White was the first year. Reggie White signed with Green Bay, and then the next year, it wasn't really a big deal that first year. The second year, which was my year, so it would have been 93, the end of the 93 season. That's when free agency really took off. And it's funny. So I became a free agent. And I didn't want to leave I love being there, but my opportunity wasn't there. I mean, you talk about Matt Wells and everything that, you know, happened with him, where he goes, you know, he's a Utah State guy, but, you know, the kind of money he got, I mean, it was just at the time was insane money.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not even a backup quarterback money today. The whole salary cap was 30. I think the first year was $32 million for the whole entire team.
Yeah,
and now it's like $191 million for. I mean, quarterbacks are averaging over $30 million a year just them alone, their cap number. So, yeah, it was an insane deal.
Yeah.
And I just remember getting a check and going, I've never seen this many zeros. Like, I get it when people say it, it's like, wow.
Because
like,
you only get 16 of them, right?
You don't look at the first number. You just look at all the other numbers.
All the other numbers.
Yeah. You're just like, a lot of zeros there. That's all I know. That's a lot, you know, a long thing. So, yeah, it's quite a moment when all of that happens. And people actually said, they go, you know, oh, you were just lucky. You're just lucky. You're in the right place. I mean,
and
I'm telling you, I worked my butt off, man.
Yeah.
I did. I picked him up and put him down for a long time before I ever stepped on the field, and there was no luck in any of it, at all. It was, you know, just creating your opportunity and just making the most of it when you had it was all it was. I saw this article, and this was really interesting, and this relates to the NFL, but today there are 169 former NFL players who are actually coaching high school football. And I did that. And I think they said in the past, I don't know, certain number of years have been over 700 former NFL players who have actually gone back and coached high school football. And the reason I think was kind of shocking, but it's why I did it. It wasn't like, oh, I want to get into coaching and I want to work my way up kind of thing. For me, it was more about I had such great coaches and I came from such a great community that and that those coaches meant so much to me in my life, yeah. You know, that I wanted to give back to the community and share kind of my insight and what I'd learned and what I'd experienced with the community that had given me so much growing up. And I have to tell you, it was so rewarding. I mean, I loved doing it. And I actually found out I was that coach that I hated. You know, yeah, you know, I wasn't like this easy. I was tough on the players, yeah. You know, and I was real with them, and they're probably sometimes they did not like me, but I felt like I owed them that kind of, you know, I'm going to hold you to a standard. I see more in you than maybe you see in yourself right now, and I'm not going to let you get away with just being average and okay.
I've heard from players that have gone into coaching that it can be, especially guys that have had a lot of success. Like you look around the NBA, there's not a lot of high-level players that end up making good coaches.
Right.
Like, you know, Larry Bird had a little bit of a run there, but right. We got Magic Johnson failed miserably. And, yeah. I mean, because there's some guys out there that because – and I don't want to say – and when I say this, I don't want to mean that it diminishes the work that you put in, but – the game was probably a little easier for you than it was for your average Joe Schmuckatelli out there.
Right.
In terms of your ability and reading defenses and stuff like that. And so I've always heard that players that played at a high level sometimes have a hard time connecting with guys that aren't at their same level physically because they're like, why don't you see that? Why don't you just throw that 15-yard out on a rope? He's like, well, I can't. Like, right. I'm sorry. It just I don't have the physical makeup. I can't do that. Was that a problem, or did you struggle with that at all?
And in the very beginning, it was like it dawned on me really quick. It's like, oh, they don't see this like I do.
Yeah,
like I didn't. My journey through football was weird because I just did it.
Yeah.
I didn't think about where I was. I was just like, I can do it. When I was in high school, I could do it. When I went to college, I could do it. When I went to the pros, I could do it. So it was just normal. It didn't ever change. And so. And then when I went back and I started coaching and started watching this, I was like, what was normal to me was not normal to most people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you have to adjust it. And I was around coaches that were, there was two trains of thought, and there's the coach that's a system guy that just says, this is the system. We're going to do it. So a guy like when I played for Bobby Ross, he was just like, this is my system. It doesn't change. I don't change anything.
Oh, I haven't even thought about that guy. Forever.
You have to fit in my system. Coach Shula was like, I got Larry Zonka. I'm going to run the football. I got Dan Marino. I'm going to throw the football. And so he was just like, whatever you do, that's what we're going to do. And Bill Walsh was a system guy, but he also was a person guy too, and he was good at, because the West Coast offense with Brett Favre was very different than the West Coast offense with Joe Montana, and so to me, I'm more of a who do I have, we'll work around what you can do, and I just stripped it down to kind of a real basic kind of mindset and tried to teach it on a level. Because I think coaching is more just about communicating with people and getting everyone on the same page, and so figuring out how to communicate with people was really what I tried to do.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here. It is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell as Scotty. What am I today? Scotty Mitchell?
Scotty. Billy Mitchell?
Billy Mitchell. I can't even remember my name anymore. I'm so flustered. Scotty G. When we come back, it's the 2-minute drill. Scotty Billy Mitchell here with Scotty G, who's with Hans and Scotty on The Zone. And they precede us, right?
Yeah, I think that's the right word. Yeah.
Proceed with
caution. Every day, 12 to 3.
Every day, 12 to 3 here on The Zone. Anyways, he's been so kind to fill in with me tonight. Thank you very much. It's time for the 2-minute drill.
Love it. Let's go.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Let me explain to you what happens in the 2-minute drill. late in a football game, you got to go down the field goal, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show. Go home happy with the trophy, because everyone gets a trophy today. Two COVID shots and a plethora of desserts. All right, you ready for it?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. What do we got here? Anything of value? $100
million. I'll take it.
$100 million worth of buyouts already for college football coaches.
Just dead money. That's all
it is.
Is
that insane?
Some guy getting paid a lot of money not to coach. God bless America. Sign me up.
Zion Williamson is 330 pounds. The NBA lists him at 284. He looks like me.
Pre-soda.
Yes.
But with that said, how often does that happen? When you've been in a locker room, you know what these guys, you see them on the scale, and then you look at the game program, you're like, whatever. That goes on all the time, right?
See, if I'm that heavy, I don't know that I could dunk anymore. Like when you're young, it's like it's a good thing, and I didn't struggle with my weight in the NFL. People might think, you know, I never did. It was after, like, way after I was done playing. It's hard because you have, and he's in New Orleans.
Yeah,
you have so much good food.
A lot of po' boys down there. You got the what do you call it? The creme. I don't know. Yeah, gumbo down there. Now I was thinking of the desserts.
Oh, yeah.
Beignets. There you go. Thank you.
Yes. Beignets. Café du Monde.
That's exactly what I was thinking of right there.
There's nothing better than a donut at Café du Monde. Apparently, an Oklahoma senator proposes to name Desolation Highway after USC head coach Lincoln Riley. It's 3 inches. Oh, 3 inches of the highway.
Wow.
I was on the loneliest highway in America this weekend. There is, that's the name of it. You don't know where it is.
Where?
It's in Nevada. Yeah. I took the long way home from the Pac-12 championship.
You drove it?
I drove the loneliest highway in Nevada.
Wow. It's not a fun drive. I've driven that before, and then I realized I'm going to fly it. Because I love road trips. I'll drive to Vegas. I'll never fly to Vegas. I'll always drive to Vegas.
No, it was insane following all the people down there. So I went home the back way so I didn't have to run into anyone. All right, we have Jake Hatch. Of course, he's at John Watson Chevrolet. What's going on, Jake?
Oh, not too much, guys. How are you?
Doing well. You better. Great program tonight. Great opportunity to honor some of the best high school athletes across the state of Utah, the who's who, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the 15th year of this, funny enough. It's been a long time coming. The funny thing is I was just talking to Corey Watson, who runs the dealership up here. We haven't done this for almost 2 years due to the pandemic, so super excited to be back out here honoring the best high school athletes up here in northern Utah.
They going
to
let you hit the pregame meal at all or anything like that?
Oh, they got pizza sitting out here, so we're looking forward to it. It looks like it should be a pretty good meal for everybody that's here.
That's a staple food for of course, high school kids.
Get some steaks in those kids. Come on.
they know what's up. Absolutely. They know their audience. They're going to take care of them. No problem.
Well, I know they've been doing this for a long time and a staple in our community as well, and it's always cool to honor these kids. They've been busting their butts for the last several years.
Yeah, we got 9 different high schools who are going to have athletes honored tonight. I told you guys a little earlier on when we did the other hit that we have about 6 guys on by my count who are going to go to Division I football next year. So this is really, really fun. It's something I've looked forward to. I've been working with them for the past 5 or 6 years doing this. It's always cool to see these athletes get honored for their stellar play on the field.
Yeah, I've spoke here before. A neat event. John Watson does a great job. Thank you so much, Jake. Enjoy your evening.
Absolutely. Stop by, guys. 3535 Wall Avenue in Ogden. That's John Watson Chevrolet.
3535 Wall Avenue. Go down there, say hi. You'll hear Hans talk. You'll run into Jake. And it's a great the radio station loves being in partners with John Watson. They do such a tremendous job down there.
And you might even get a piece of pizza.
Yeah, there you go.
Might even get a piece of pizza. All right. We got more to come here in the next hour. I think we're going to talk probably Ohio State versus Utah in the Rose Bowl, because that is happening. This is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. We'll be back in a bit.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keering.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scotty, Billy Mitchell, and Scotty G here tonight. Of course, Alex is on vacation. Scotty's been so kind to fill in and had an awesome time tonight.
This is fun.
I've just thoroughly enjoyed this. Love your insight. Love your questions.
Sorry, I just enjoy picking your brain here.
No, believe me. It's like, and good luck picking at my brain, too, by the way. But what little information is in there, I'm happy to share it with you. So there was an interesting article that came out and about the college playoffs. So this year, what if the college season was actually expanded? And this is what it would look like. And let me just run through it really quick and kind of get your ideas, because I thought this was really fascinating. And I thought it was amazing. And I am like, wow, this would be so awesome to see this. And I think we'd all be surprised at maybe who ended up winning at the end. So the top four conference winners get a bye.
All right.
Okay, that's what they're proposing. So that would be Alabama, Michigan, Cincinnati, and Baylor. Then the next eight teams are at large, and the conference champions that are the highest ranked.
All right.
So Georgia would be an at large, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, Michigan State, and then Utah would be the highest ranked Pac-12 conference, and then Pitt would be the highest ranked in the ACC.
Yeah.
Okay. So 5 through 12 would play the first week. So you'd have Georgia playing Pitt, Notre Dame playing Utah.
I like that matchup.
Ohio State, Michigan State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma. So that'd be your first week, and so they would be at the highest ranked home sites. So you're going to be in Georgia, South Bend, Columbus, and Oxford, Mississippi.
And so if Utah wins, then they go take on Cincinnati, right?
So now, right. So then the next week, which is the second round, and these are four of the six New Year's bowl games. So it would be, they have the Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Peach Bowl, and the Fiesta Bowl. So you'd have Alabama, they projected Ole Miss, Michigan, Ohio State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, or Utah, and Baylor, Georgia.
Wow. I like the Lane Kiffin, Nick Saban rematch, too.
Wouldn't that be?
This is awesome.
If you're watching this and you want to watch football, would you not? And this is,
I'd be
these are
all
bowls,
in on this.
Right?
I'd be all in. This is a complete no-brainer.
And then the semifinal would be the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl, and they have Alabama, Baylor, Michigan, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And then the championship game is the championship game.
Let's go. Why are we not doing this?
Isn't that – I mean, I looked at that. I'm just like – and you're kind of like, anyone could do this,
yeah.
Right? I mean, anyone could win this year, I mean, especially with those 12 teams.
And the money that thing would generate, my goodness.
I know. It'd be amazing. Well, folks, we've come to the end of the program. Thank you for listening. This is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Thank you so much,
you
Scotty, for tuning in. Until then, well, I guess we'll see you then. Have a good night, folks.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.